My name is Ralph Yarrow. I'm 89 years old. Today is March 18th, and I'm speaking with Jim Keane, who is my good friend. And we're recording this interview in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Jim, can you tell me a little bit about your childhood? What were you like as a child? Were you...
Early childhood, I have limited memory, but I remember that I was kind of a skinny, scrawny kid.
Scrawny,
that,
huh?
That wasn't too happy. Did a lot of crying when I knew I shouldn't. Huh. And
and where were you? In what city?
We were in Millwood.
No, here in Kalamazoo.
Here in Kalamazoo.
Okay.
And it turned out that when my knees began to swell up and so on, the physician said, well, you need your tonsils out. They're terrible. And, of course, everybody had their tonsils out in those days. But anyway, it made a big difference in my life.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Did you get
become
ice?
Become much more robust.
So did your knees quit swelling then?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you get ice cream after you had the operation? I remember.
I don't remember that. I remember vomiting blood. That's what I remember.
How about the high school years? What were they like?
After the Millwood, going through the ninth grade, uh-huh, in Millwood, the transition to Kalamazoo Central was huge.
Really?
And in the phys ed class that I had on the first or second day, there was a fight between two guys on one of the benches in the locker room, and I never had seen anything like that. That was, you know, they were flailing away at each other, and I, it was hard to take seeing that. I thought, what am I getting into? But it all smoothed out.
Were you a strong student? Were you?
After high school, of course, I went to Western, and I had a B average. So I was not a strong student in high school either. But I think I probably had about the same average. And
do you remember a teacher in high school or at Western that particularly impressed you?
In high school, there was, I think his name was Woods or Woody or something, a high school history teacher we had for history, and he taught the class like it was a college level. And you came in and stayed quiet and watched him write on the board and start in one corner of the room and go right on around filling the boards up and talking and lecturing, and that was a memorable class. And that and plus a chemistry class. I don't remember the men's name that taught it.
You think you had a knack for chemistry?
Well, I had an interest for it, and we got into organic chemistry, and We had to have a term project. And one of my good friends and I teamed up and decided that we'd check dog foods to see how much protein was in them, how much fat, and so on.
That's interesting. This is in high school?
In high school.
Oh, how interesting.
And there was a class, a lab that we had every day, and as well as lectures. But then for the project, we were allowed to come in after school and use the laboratory. And we got into a little bit of a problem with glassware, and it had sulfuric acid in it.
Uh-oh.
And I had it in my hand, and I was stirring it with a glass rod. I poked a hole in the bottom of the flask.
Really?
Yeah. And I know that the student aide or whoever it was that was supposed to be there overseeing after school things was nowhere to be seen. My buddy, I hollered at him, and I started climbing up on the, I didn't realize I'd done it, frankly. I realized, oh boy, I got it in my hand. And went to the sink and was washing that off, and then I felt the on my thigh. And I looked down there, and my pants had just turned to jelly. And they were bubbling on my thigh. And of course, I ripped my pants off and got up in the sink, got under the hot water, or the water right away. And I still have scars.
On your thigh?
On my thigh.
Is the hand all right?
Yeah. I got to that right away. Uh-huh. But on my thigh, I just didn't realize was happening. And so I had a great respect for sulfuric acid from then on.
Particularly sulfuric acid
and my
combined with
career
fabric.
From then on, and in the Army and everywhere else, it seems like I ran into that.
Everywhere you go, there's sulfuric acid.
Yeah.
Were your grandparents part of that, your early years?
Yes.
And did you have time with them?
Yes. Yeah. Not as much as if they had lived next door or even here in Kalamazoo, but one lived in Allegan, the other one in Grand Rapids. And in those days, the car we were driving, my dad limited to 50 miles an hour, and that was it. And but we would go to Grand Rapids periodically and Allegan, and I played checkers with my granddad Keene.
Did you win?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, he didn't let me win. And he was a very interesting character,
Do you think your relationship with them helped you with your relationship of being a grandparent now?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I'd like to have more time with my grandchildren. But they are all in Kalamazoo, and except one is here in Grand Rapids. So they're all nearby, and we do get together for birthdays and holidays and so on. And it's I feel that's all the presence I can make.
The next question is about difficult moments. And I guess I should say now that all of us here know that your wife Marilyn died recently. And the question here is about one of the most difficult moments in your life. The sulfuric acid on your thigh sounds like it could be one. But would you like to comment about Marilyn and how it's...
Oh, my. We met at the Kalamazoo YWCA dance, Saturday night dance.
Boy.
And...
Sounds like the beginning of a movie.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is that there were two other fellows and myself decided to go to the Y dance, and we had never gone there before. And we all met girls who turned out to be our wives that night. And with no in-betweens, we established, steady. We went steady. and we ended up marrying those girls.
That is an interesting story.
And
did you all marry about the same time?
Within about a year.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I had seen the girl that I had eyes for, let's put it that way. on the dance floor, I had danced with her, and I didn't make a very good impression because I don't dance. And that was about my first experience. And the Y dance floor had two levels, and the band was up on the second level, the highest level. There was a little 5 or 6 step stairway to go up there. And so when I asked her to dance, it was crowded, and I said, let's go up the stairs there. So she led the way, and I can still remember the way she had her hair in a bob and how it kind of danced with her strides. She was athletic. And we started up the steps, and I fell headlong right up the steps. Stubbed my toe and boom. And what a way to make an entry, you know, on a brand new.
It's memorable anyway.
Yeah.
Sounds like and it worked out.
It worked out right up until we got into the car. One of my buddies had a car, and the other, of course, he was driving, and one of the girls sat beside him. We're going to take them home, and they agreed as long as they could all go together, mm-hmm. And so that meant that we crowded in two couples in the back seat, and the two girls got in the back seat, and my buddy, started to get in and sit beside the girl that I wanted. And I just reached over and got him by the hips and pulled him back out of the car. And slid in beside the girl that I wanted. And that's the way we started. Took them home.
And what? How old were you? Where were you in school and so forth at this point then?
If we went together for 2 years, and were engaged for another year, so. if I'm looking backward, that I was probably 17, 18 when that all occurred. Mm-hmm. We were still in high school.
Still in high school. Mm-hmm.
So we must have been seniors. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Be right about 17.
So it sounded like you got married when you were 21 or 22 or something.
Yep, 21. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About how long were you married to Marilyn?
67 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've known you both here at Friendship, and I've always, really always thought you were a very devoted couple, and you were devoted to her and cared for her in a way that I admired. How many, and you had children, how many?
Two girls.
And they're nearby?
Yes, one's in Vicksburg and one's in Grand Rapids.
And they have
children. And Hastings, actually.
And they have children?
One of them has three children. The other girl and her husband decided not to have any children.
Okay. And you told me earlier that you do have occasions when you could be with them and you wish you could be with them a little more.
Yeah. I've got a birthday coming up, and that's all planned for my youngest daughter's farmhouse out by Hastings.
And how does that farmhouse? How do you relate to that farmhouse?
Well, they picked it out. They decided they were going to live.
So it's not in your family.
I mean, it's not. It has not been in the family.
I think I remember you telling me about your house. Do I remember that it's in Portage?
Yes. Well, the house we left to come here was in Vicksburg address.
Oh, okay.
It was two miles south of Vicksburg on Y Avenue. It's about the most southerly east-west street in the county.
Okay.
So we were right on the southern edge of the county.
Was there a stream or water involved?
The Barton Lake.
Barton Lake?
Yeah. The stream that the Portage River comes down from, let's see. Comes down from Portage.
I think of it feeding into the Kalamazoo River in Kalamazoo.
Eventually, it does not go to the St. Joe. It goes to the, it does not go to the Kalamazoo River. It goes to the St. Joe River. In Three Rivers. And it's the Portage Creek when it goes by us, and then they called it Portage River after it comes out of Portage Lake. It goes in and out of Portage Lake. It runs through that.
Oh, okay.
And and there's another little lake in there. I can't remember right now. But in that watershed. But we built a house, and on the hill overlooking the road, and immediately across the street on the far side of the road, we have a lot. And it's a very large lot, but it's all marsh. It's not buildable. But I made good use of it. I put a walkway. I applied to be able to put in some fill. I wanted to be able to drive a car down to the river, and the conservation people said no. That would be building a dam in the river, in the water flow. Water doesn't flow through there, it just lays in there. But I understand the feeling. And so anyway, we have that lot. And I always had a boat and a motor and a fish, little dock I had, and the walkway to get down there. And I used it a lot. And had a lot of good times on that river.
Did you fish?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We're about halfway through.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond the teachers that we talked about early, or can you think of one or two people that have been a big influence on your life, maybe in your employment or marriage or church, maybe?
I can think of several. at one point, I picked the wrong thing here. A good part in my life changed it. I graduated from Western, I got married, and I got drafted into the Army in 1951, all in the same year.
Cool.
So it was a full year. And after I was drafted, it was before I was drafted, and we were married, and I was looking for a job, and I knew that I was going to be inducted probably later in the year, 1951, and somehow that was conveyed. And when I applied for jobs, I would feel honor-bound to tell them that, well, in fact, at that time I was not drafted. That's right. I can tell them that I was draft bait. And it did turn out that I got drafted in November of that year. But I had to tell them that. And I had applied many places. Of course, when I told them that, well, you're only here for 6 months, and, you know, that's no good. And but I finally went down to Ingersoll Steel in Kalamazoo here. And they led me into the purchasing agent's office, and we had an interview, and I told him exactly where I stood, and I said, it makes it tough, but I'm looking for work for a while. And you know, Mr. Keene, that's if we hire you now, then when you get out of the service, we are honor bound to take you back in, and it's an obligation. And so I says, okay, and thank you, and turned around and I started to leave the room, and I would just about open the door, and he said, Keene, he says, get your ass back in here. Just exactly what he said. He was a big, old cigar-chewing guy. And I just turned around and went back, and he says, "What in the hell?" Oh, the air was blue with cursing and whatnot.
And cigar smoke.
And cigar smoke. And what are you supposed to do? You've done everything you can do, and you're going to be drafted. The Korean War is on, you know, so on and so forth. He says, "I'll give you a job." It's good. And they sent me to he was the chief purchasing agent, and the others were purchasing something a little lower on the scale. And Ingersoll was building the amphibious tanks at the time for the war effort. And
I think I remember somewhere somebody talking about ducks. They
called them ducks. The tracks on them had fins on them, and so they just drive them right into the water, and the fins would keep the thing going, and they'd hold 20 men, something like that, and the front would drop down, and when they hit the beach, and hopefully there wouldn't be anybody like there was at Anzio and some of the other bad ones. I haven't thought about these names for a long time, but I worked for a purchasing agent in the mill, and I followed up on late deliveries, and I sat down. They gave me a stack about that high of purchase orders, and said, "Call these people up and be authoritative and tell them you want those nuts or those bolts or those whatever it is." And so I put on the air, and this is James Keene at the Ingersoll Steel. Where are those bolts we're supposed to have? And so, you know, I was a follow-up guy.
So it sounds like that cigar-chewing, smoking, cussing guy had quite an impact on you.
He had a real impact on me.
Somebody else you want to mention?
Yeah, the guy that was set across the card table at the when I was drafted, I was being inducted, and we had a talk like this. To assign me, I didn't realize this at the time, but the military occupational specialty number, MOS number. And I could tell him that I was telling him that I had the BA, the bachelor's degree in biology and chemistry and so on. And That I had worked 4 summers for the Up Young Company, and I had experience there in animal surgery and so on. And I laid on everything I could. And he says, "Well," he says, "Keene," he says, "I'm going to do you a favor." And he says, "I'm going to give you an MOS number that will keep you in the States, and they will not be able to send you overseas without a presidential proclamation." And I thought, "Oh, that's a bunch of malarkey." And but that's what he did. He gave me this thing and so on. But everybody at that time had to go through 4 months of light infantry basic. So I did that down at Fort Knox, Kentucky. It was a It was a chore. And pretty heavy schedule. And we got graduated in the company street and in lineup, and they began calling out names and where they were going. And it became very clear very soon. We were among the very first integrated Army units, infantry units. And we had a good number of African-American people. And I've got great respect for several of them. But when he got to me, well, the rest of them, it was either Korea or it was Europe. And it became very clear very shortly that Europe, with all the white fellows, were going to go to Europe, and all the black fellows were going to go to, really. And it became obvious to everybody on the street. I mean, we had three companies of men, and the low murmur began to come up, and there was almost an open rebellion.
Wow.
It was so obvious, and it was terrible. And they got it under control, and they went on with it.
And what happened to you?
Well, they called my name, and you're going to go to San Luis Obispo, California. And, okay. I was married, of course, by then.
So did Marilyn go with you? Did she go out there?
And she came with me. I was assigned to a small army hospital. And we worked, I was in the x-ray clinic. I became an x-ray technician. And I knew all my anatomy and all of my bones and everything, and it worked out fine. And after about a year, I got a call. I have to finish this story.
Okay, that's fine. We got time.
And I got a call, and it was the what we called the down at the main base. California has a lot of mountains and hills, and the hospital was up on a hill, and main base was down lower. So, well, the main base is calling you on the telephone in the X-ray clinic. So I got, King, get down here. He says, we're going to go to Korea. And we've got you all set up here for your immunizations. So, okay, I went down. I got it in both arms, and all of the stuff. And went back up, went to work, thought, Marilyn, I'll have to tell her tonight. I'm not going to call her during the day. And so when it kept on working, and about an hour and a half later, phone rings for me. Keen, why didn't you tell us you had that MOS number? We can't send you overseas without a presidential proclamation. I was absolutely amazed. And
all those unnecessary jabs there.
Do you know what they were talking about? They were talking about the fact that we never went to war with Korea. We never proclaimed war. And somehow or other, that restriction was put on that MOS number to keep somebody with reasonable hospital experience and so on the state side. That's all I know. But did it, and since they never did proclaim war, I never went overseas for 2 years in California. And my wife with me, we had a great time.
We've got a little over 5 minutes left. I've got a number of questions. One involves advice that you might give your teenage self. If you were in a room with yourself as a teenager, have you got something you might say to yourself?
You know, you try to think of something that you would correct or that you want to do differently. My folks grew up talking about school and college. College was always a part of my education. And I had confidence in being able to go to school. We were lucky, right here in town. And by that time I had a good part of my virility growing up. I wasn't that little kid with big tonsils. And I did a lot of hunting and fishing with my buddies, and I knew that I was going to get drafted someday, and I did. I don't have anything earth-shaking that I would have said to myself.
Well, it sounds like you're talking about the importance of education and staying with it.
Absolutely. And finding the right life.
I think you just said that you don't think you have any regrets. Would you say that you don't have any major regrets?
Yeah, I don't have any major regrets.
It sounds to me like you've had a positive outlook, positive approach to many things in life, and had many positive things happen to you. Can you think of any negative events that may have knocked you off course or anything?
Well, here again, the education probably saved me when I got discharged from the service. I just assumed I was going to go back to Upjohn. And they were going to just take me. Well, they didn't. And I pounded on their door for 3 years to get a job in there again. And I went in for another person that I think sadly, in a way, he was a family friend, and he hired me into his unit at Upjohn. And I say sadly because it's who you know sometimes. And it's not the way you would have it. But on the other hand, I think I fit the job at the time very well.
How long were you at the Upjohn Company?
34 years and about 9 months.
Sound like
I know one. It isn't 35 because I didn't make the cut in the insurance rate. And I called Pfizer by that time. Said, I got my 35-year clock. I got my 35-year plaque. I had a luncheon with my group and the thing, and didn't I make 35 years? And, well, we'll research that. And they did, and they came back, and it was something like 9 months. 34 years and 9 months. And I thought Upjohn would have given that to me. And I just know they would have.
Pfizer would, and Pfizer would not.
Pfizer wouldn't.
And they went by the book.
Yeah.
How about a happy memory? We've been trying to talk about negative. I'll bet it involved Maryland. Maybe not.
Well, it did. In a lot of ways, the 2 years we had in the military in California was wonderful. We saw all the national parks. We camped wherever we wanted to, and one of the experiences was we found that there was a back road to get into Yosemite Valley. The main road comes along the southerly side of the canyon, and the Merced River comes down through there. We could come in on what we called the Oak Flat Road and over the edge and down into the canyon from the other side. And by that time we were living in Oakland. I got transferred up to the 3rd Army Area Veterinary Lab. And we were doing chemical analyses and everything from ice cream to ground meat to all the things that a veterinarian would take. And that's where I ran back into sulfuric acid. And I did what we called a oxalate extraction of the fat content of meat. And so when it was decided we were going to do that, anybody here know anything about that? Yeah, I did it. On dog food.
And my pants.
And my pants. Yeah. So I set that up, and it was interesting work, it was very joyful. We took this Old Flat Road one time, and we didn't time or didn't get started early enough, and it got dark. And we were coming across the Old Flat Road, and there was a beautiful little stream. And in the headlights, you could see it. It was a paved road, but it was just barely paved. And we finally decided, let's just put our sleeping bags and air mattresses out here under the stars. Mm-hmm. And so we did, and parked in a little opening that I could pull off the road and put the sleeping bags up in the front of, toward the front of the car. Woke up the next morning and that whole thing was mountain lupin. It was just gorgeous. We were right in the middle of a big bouquet.
I thought you were going to tell me it was poison ivy.
No, it was lupin, and it was really, really beautiful. Oh. We had a lot of experiences like that.
And nice way to end the interview, Jim. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay, that's it.
All right.
I like
thank you for
ending
sharing.
On your.